Hi, everybody. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for this Tuesday, June 27th. I'm Alan Chartok. On today's program, The Copyright Forum, joining me in the studio are Paul Rapp, Polly Law, Bill Westwood. They're here to answer your questions about protecting your writing, your music, and art. Do you have a poem that somebody stole? Give us a call at 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. And we'll be seeing you on the other side, but you can get in touch with us at whatever. You can get in touch with us right here, WAMC. Hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. On today's show, it's the Copyright Forum. To answer your questions, we have a great panel, a usual panel in the studio. Paul Rapp is an intellectual property lawyer and writer in the Berkshires. He represents musicians, writers, fine artists, and businesses involved in the creative economy. He lectures widely on intellectual property issues and wrote a column for the Metroland, but there is no more Metroland.
I write for the Alt now.
Now you write for the Alt, yep. That's right. And Bill Westwood, I think he's terrific also, is one of the country's leading medical illustrators. And that's wrong. I'm sorry, we have to correct that. Bill Westwood is the country's leading medical illustrator and a professional member and past president of the Association of Medical Illustrators. If a certain museum over in the Berkshires knew what it was doing, they would give him the show he's entitled to. Polly Law is past president of the Graphic Artists Guild, an organization focused on the rights of artists. She's a designer, illustrator, and artist whose works are in numerous private collections and is represented by galleries in Rhinebeck, New York, along with Provincetown in Nantucket, Massachusetts. Give us a call, 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. This is going to be a very busy show. Got two calls to answer right now. They'll all be there. And you will not get on the air to talk about how somebody stole your poem. And if you went to a public college, or a poem if you went to a private college, and you will see it in the New Yorker, and that's because you didn't call. In any case, here we go. We'll go. Oh, I have to move this thing. You know, I'm a little guy, so I have to move this thing over here. Okay. And we're going to go to Dawn in Del Mar. Dawn in Del Mar, you're there.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Perfect timing. I have several little questions related to, it is about a poem. I've been...
Did you go to a private college?
Pardon me?
Did you go to a private college?
Yes.
Okay. Because you said poem. So I figured you went to a private college. Because at Hunter in the Bronx, okay. It was poem. Go ahead.
I see. Okay, got it. All right. So I've had a poem accepted at a small literary press, and they asked me if I had a photo to accompany the poem. And in fact, there is a photo that inspired the poem, and it's a Reuters photo. So I'm wondering, would it be possible to use it? Would I need to get permission? How do I go about doing that? Will I have to pay for it? Is it fairly straightforward? And the separate question is, there is a person in the photo who's identified as Abu Khalid in Duma, Syria, and that's all it says, which there may be 1,000 Abu Khalids in Duma, Syria. I don't know, but would that pose a problem? Would I have to get permission from that person in addition, or would Reuters be able to answer that question? I don't know.
Okay, Dawn, we're going to get an answer to your very good question. All right. Who wants to go first?
Well, I'll go first. Probably a good idea to ask Reuters. A fair use argument can be made, I think.
Ask Shepard Fairey.
Yeah. But I would ask Reuters, and I'm guessing if you have a poem that's Albany State, if you have a poem that was inspired by a photograph, Reuters may well say fine, and the licensing fee for a small poetry publication isn't going to be great, even if they charge.
Okay.
And in terms of the Syrian guy. No permission from him is
right.
Necessary.
Okay, great. Thank
okay.
you.
Dawn, thanks for a good call. Appreciate it.
Very good. Thank you. Bye-bye.
1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Matt in Robbinsville. Okay, here you go. Matt in Robbinsville, New Jersey. All right. Hey, hey Matt, where is Robbinsville? Where is Robbinsville?
Robbinsville is between Trenton and Princeton, New Jersey. And I used to be from Niskayuna and moved out of the area and still listen on the web to this great station and program.
Wow.
So, thanks.
Yeah. Okay. My question is, I'm a songwriter and do-it-yourself publisher. 25 years ago, I recorded a song where my son and four of his 8-year-old friends performed on the song. And I never published it and never obtained any releases or anything. Now I'm re-recording that song and will be publishing it on iTunes and CD Baby and Spotify. And am wondering, do I need to get release for the performance of those children 25 years ago? And do I get it from the children, or do I get it from the children's parents, or do I not need it at all?
So you're going to use the recordings of them?
Yes. The actual track that we recorded at Cotton Hill Studios, the actual track.
I probably a good idea to give each of the. I mean, they're not kids anymore. They're adults.
They're adults now.
And so they're
adults now.
They're certainly willing to give their consent to their performances as children. And why would they say no? I think
it's more of logistics. It's finding them.
Yeah, well, that's what the internet's good for. But I would do that. Just it might be an overabundance of caution, but
it's worth it.
Yeah.
Always do what's right. Who said that?
Would the right thing be also to pay royalties? I don't know how, because usually I do things independently. Would they be entitled to royalties? And if so, how do you do that with one song on an album of 15 songs?
Right, and they didn't write any of the songs, right?
I mean, no one wrote anything I've produced.
I would worry about that when there's money to split up, which is, you know, how the music business is. And, you know, you would get a pro rata share. So if you had five kids on an album with 15 songs, how many albums you sell, it would be complicated, and it would be a fraction of a fraction.
And it would be a very small check you'd have to have to cut for each of them.
But I wouldn't have to get the rights organizations involved at this stage, because then it gets complicated, very complicated.
Yeah, I wouldn't get the rights. I mean, they're not songwriters, so you don't have to worry about ASCAP or BMI.
Right.
And so, you know, again, it's going to be a very small amount.
But. I mean, technically, you could fall back on the fact that there's no written contract. And if there's no written contract, the rights devolve. Well, do they devolve to him?
Not necessarily. You know, I would try to get a hold of them. If you can't, I wouldn't worry about it too much.
Okay, this is all sounding kind of good. Thank you, Matt. Here we go to Hudson in Cairo. All right, Hudson in Cairo, you're on.
Oh, hi. Hi, everybody. I especially want to say hi to Polly.
Hey, Hudson, how are you doing?
Hey, and thank you so much for serving on our panel. Polly and I were just on a panel at a wonderful book fair at the Catskill Interpretive Center this past weekend. So this is, I guess, a question for you, I hope. It's about what copyright there is on paintings that are owned by museums that I would like to use in a children's book. The painters are all, long gone. The paintings themselves are over 150 years old, but they are the property of various museums. So I'm just wondering if Polly or any of your guests could kind of give me the story on what I need to do about getting the rights to use those paintings in a book.
Well, the real copyright issue resides in the fact that the museums own the rights to reproduced images of those paintings.
But
they don't?
But the images are in the public domain if they're 150 years.
Right, they're in the public domain.
But they're photographs of them.
And photographs don't carry independent of paintings don't carry any independent, because there's no creativity involved. There's
it's lighting, just record.
It's just they're trying to slavishly imitate. So the museums won't tell you this, but you're free to use any images of the paintings that you find on the internet, because those the copyrights are well into the public domain.
Right.
Oh, go for it.
Great news.
Thank you so much.
Whoa. If there's a chance to throw something into the works, I want to do that.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay, so let's say that Hudson finds on the internet a copy of a Grand Master from the Metropolitan Museum of Art.
Mm-hmm.
Are you telling me he can use their product?
Mm-hmm. They don't own any copyright in it.
Because it's the image, not the
art.
There was not a, the art. Yeah, there have been a number of cases involving Getty images and where they'd go into the Louvre and spend tens of thousands of dollars taking these immaculate photographs of Grand Masters. And then license them and claim ownership rights. And the court said, we don't care how much money you spent taking this photograph. All you're trying to do is exactly reproduce the photograph. And that image is in the public domain. And there's nothing creative in a copyright sense about what you did.
Okay. Let me try this one then. What if you get a very creative Andy Warhol type who comes along and takes the image and then sort of makes waves out of the image. You know what I'm saying? In a photograph. Is that now his and copyrighted?
Well,
what he added to it, arguably,
it's transformative.
Yeah. But if the image is in the public domain,
to begin with,
the original image he won't have any claim to, but whatever he added to it.
Right.
So his image with waves on it, people couldn't take that.
Okay, now there have been questions in the past from people who get their artwork photographed for reproduction in like postcards or magazines or stuff. And the photographers try to exert a copyright claim on the photographs that they've taken.
Right.
So those have been voided?
Yes. They won't be photographing people's artwork for very long if they do that.
Okay.
I mean, it's the same thing with novels. There are novels from the 1800s. That are now showing up with like vampires in them, just written into the, and that's fine, that's okay, because they're public domain works.
I once dated a girl.
She was in the public domain.
That's very funny. That's
you can do whatever you want with her.
Okay, and her father made a fortune replicating grandmasters with the. You know what I'm talking about here, where you actually could feel the paint on the thing, and all the rest of it. And he had no rights to that in terms of copyright.
Just the physical object, the painting. He has the right to that. He owns it, and then he can sell it, and off it goes.
But could he sell the rights to reproduce it?
He could try, but I don't think again.
If somebody challenged him.
That's like an old school version of the photographic.
We're having so much fun. I have to take a little break here. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Hold on a second. I'm still on the line. Can I still ask one
more? No, you're off. Goodbye.
Oh no.
Okay, go ahead.
Support for WAMC comes from Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, New York, providing custom fabrication, commercial casework, and interactive kiosks for trade shows, museum exhibits, and special events. EmpireExhibits.com. Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, career testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume, and cover letter writing. Careers in Transition, LLC.com. Coldham and Hartman Architects, serving residential and institutional clients with architecture designed for resilience and renewability, designed for the next 100 years, cnharchitects.com. Love Apple Farm, Route 9H, Ghent, New York. You pick fruit and berries, cafe, market, bakery, petting zoo, and celebrating the opening of Love Apple Art Space, July 2nd from 2 to 5 p.m., loveapplefarm.com. And Boyden and Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services and a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years. BoydenandPerrin.com.
Hey, here we go. Hey, Hudson. Hudson just called in. I'm told the panel voted 3-1 that I was fresh to the guy. So he's invited to call back. Okay, Hudson, you can call back. All right. Now we're going to go to Bahar in East Hampton, Massachusetts. All right, Bahar, you're on.
Hi, hi. I love the show. Thank you so much for taking my call.
What do you like about it?
A whole bunch of things, especially the fact that this particular subject is something I posted on Facebook to all my friends, and they all had such differing opinions that this is so lucky that this is a particular subject today.
Okay, hit it.
I'm an aspiring business owner, and I want to name the business. I'm sure this is something that's, I don't know, but I've looked for domain names and I've looked around to see if anyone else has a name. And the only thing I found was in a different state, and they're a magazine. They're an independently produced magazine. And they have the same name, and it's slightly similar to what my product would be, to what my business would be, but not exactly the same because it's just a magazine. So... what are your thoughts on that?
Well, this is a matter of trademark law, and it's really going to depend on how similar the names are and how similar your enterprise is to being a magazine or close to the subject matter of the magazine. If they're totally unrelated, I would say you're going to be okay.
Is it a regional magazine or is it national?
No.
It's regional, I'm pretty sure. It's in Texas.
Yeah, I'm quite sure it's going to be okay, but you may want to check out the Patent and Trademark Office's database, make sure they're not they haven't registered their name for
nationally.
This or other things.
Yeah.
Hey, here comes Hudson again. Good. And
here goes
and you might consult a trademark attorney to look it over.
Okay, but if there were two restaurants, for example, we had one in Great Barrington, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which had to change its name. It's
mm-hmm.
now the Prairie Whale, right?
Right.
And it
right.
was something else. I forget what it was. But it,
Anchor
yeah,
and...
Yeah, and then they found out that some other guy, and he enforced from across the world or something, he enforced his rights.
Well, it was a guy in Long Island.
And, once across the world.
And and he was arguing that it's a similar market because Great Barrington is a vacation hub from New York City and the folks were arguing, well, no, we're in Great Barrington, you're Long Island, and we have completely different markets. And then one of those 36 hours in Great Barrington articles appeared in the New York Times. And there was the restaurant, and I'm like, game over.
Okay, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye.
We're
going to jump. Now, we almost always take them in order, which they come. But now we're going to jump to Hudson in Cairo. Hudson, I owe you an abject apology. The group voted 3-1. They outvoted me. They said, you were rude.
Even Murray voted.
You were rude.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead. Your second part of your question.
Ellen, you're too kind. I've been listening to you for at least 25 years now, so I know your style by now, and I won't take it personally. But thank you very much. I just had a follow-up question, I think for Paul or Polly. Just what you're saying is really good news for me about the use of paintings that are over 150 years old, even if they are in museums. Does that mean I don't have to write any letter of request or permission or anything to any of these museums, which I was sort of preparing myself to do, at least to let them know that I was planning to use it in a public, in a book, in a commercial form?
No, you don't have to give them any kind of notice. I mean, for style points, you might note where
an acknowledgement
it's located. But other than that, and that's not a legal requirement.
Doesn't that violate rule number one?
What?
Never ask.
Always better to ask for forgiveness than
for
to
forgiveness
get permission.
Okay.
But no permission is required here.
Hudson, thank you. Appreciate it.
Go for it.
My pleasure. Thank you so much. Take care, everybody.
Bye. Okay, now we're going to go to John in Saratoga, of all places. John, you're on. John.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, sure. Good.
My question is this. It's about fair use of sheet music for educational purposes. Can I hand write a lead sheet from a piece of music and use it in a classroom?
As a general matter, yes. Why not? You probably just use the lead sheet itself. This is a one-time use in a classroom?
A one-time use in a classroom, or you know, it might be a semester-long use in a classroom, but no money is exchanged or anything like that.
Right, and it's an educational use. Are these going to be copies for all of the? I mean, it's a close question. I have to say, and
yeah,
and I'm
so if there's 10 students in a class, they might each get a copy of a particular piece of music that I'm trying to teach them.
I think you're going to be okay, mainly because no one is, you know, no music publisher is really going to get too excited about, you know, 10 copies
right.
in a classroom in Saratoga. You know,
right.
technically you probably should get some kind of license or buy the sheet music from them, but
I'm not photocopying, you know, purchased sheet music. It would be a handwritten version of maybe a transcription from a song or something like that.
Yeah, I think you're going to be fine.
That would fit into fair use, I would think.
I think so. I mean, if you do it every semester over and over
right.
and over again.
Right, or if you make it part of an ongoing packet for them to keep studying.
Right.
Hmm.
Right. I think you'll be fine.
We got two people who said yes. I don't know anything about this, but I'd say no. Because as Jiminy Cricket said, Jiminy Cricket said, always let your conscience be your guide. Okay.
There you go.
Thanks very much. All right. Now we are going to go to, Enrico in Pittsfield. Enrico, you're
Hi,
on.
There.
Hi.
Hey. Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You sound dubious.
I thought of my question when you were talking about photographs of museum artworks and them being slavish facsimiles. And my question is about photographs of performances like theater or dance or concerts.
But those...
Are those considered reproductions or does a photographer own the copyright to those photos?
You own the copyright to those photos.
Because you've made creative decisions about positioning the camera, you know, what your focus is, you know, the creative part of it.
Color adjustments, whatever. Lighting.
But, got it. That's what I thought. I wanted to clarify that.
How come in the beginning of every theater presentation, somebody like Kate McGuire or somebody else stands up and says, taking the photographs in this theater is absolutely, and always say absolutely, and the other word, which I love, is strictly forbidden.
Flashes, and you know they don't want the actors to look out.
They don't say flashes. They just say taking of any photographs is strictly, and it's my favorite word, strictly forbidden.
Because it's annoying to everyone around you if you're like we all do, snapping away at a public performance.
Is our caller talking about taking things at a performance like that, or taking things from a professional perspective? You know, with permission.
Projects that I was involved with, or that I was hired
right.
to do as a photographer.
Yeah. So you would hold the copyright.
Well. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, taking pictures, the public just sitting there with your cell phone snapping away. I mean, it's just a matter of courtesy, rude. Professionalism, and contract. You buy your ticket, you follow their rules.
Are you an employee of the production company?
Sometimes not.
Well, it depends on your contractual arrangement then.
Yeah.
Right, of course. If I was an at-hire type of a thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Is that the phrase?
Yeah, work for hire or an employee.
Work for hire, right.
But generally, you know.
I could add, though, that the idea of a lot of times when you see it like Berkshire Theater Group or something like that and they ask you not to take photos, that there are actors' union regulations that are in play as well that try to protect the actors.
Good point.
So that might be part of it, Alan.
Yeah.
That's why it's so strict.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Great. Thanks for the answers.
Bye.
Hey, you're welcome.
Okay. And now I'm looking at who's been holding on for the longest. Oh, yeah. Molly and Modena, MM. All right, Molly and Modena, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have two questions. I'm interested in doing a political cartoon that's based on a painting, and I don't know what kind of permission I need to get to be able to do that, if any. And the second question is, I'm an interpreter, and I'm interested with a couple of people working on a project translating a trilogy of books. And what sort of permission do I need to get for that as well?
Well, question one. How many cartoons have you seen in your life, Polly? Of the Mona Lisa crying when Trump does something
stupid.
Yeah,
but Leonardo da Vinci doesn't have an organization backing, right, protecting its rights. Norman Rockwell,
right, and
this other...
and that's exactly it. Norman Rockwell is the painter I'm looking at. So.
Does it reflect immediately on? I mean, is Norman Rockwell the obvious choice to parody in this? Because if you're just riding on Norman Rockwell's composition. Because of
but it's a political cartoon.
Yeah,
I
think it sounds transformative. To
I
me.
Think it would be transformative. I mean, I'm obviously not looking at
it.
Yes, it's also satire.
Which would be fair use.
It means that it's changed the basic character and message of the original, and it doesn't replace the original. And I mean, there was Maurice in the Berkshires, who did the Four Freedoms and inserted like multicultural they talked to me about it, and I said, well, it really looks like fair use, and actually the Rockwell Museum was, they weren't, as long as he didn't commercialize the things, they weren't going to raise a finger. And they're beautiful paintings, and they make a beautiful statement. And my argument would be it's fair use. And it sounds like it's likely. I mean, these are all sort of individual questions, and you have to see the two things side by side and analyze them. But it sounds like fair use to me.
Just remember, everybody, that when they answer your questions here, it could be amount to heavy last words.
Boy,
you should be all right.
Alan is in a mood today, isn't he?
A new grandchild. That's
Don't take what we say as legal advice. We're here for entertainment purposes only.
We're kind of the car guys at copyright.
Okay, thanks an awful lot. Appreciate it. All right, now, holding on the longest is Michael in Albany.
Steve.
Michael in Albany. Your turn.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes. But you only have 3 minutes before we hit another thing.
Yeah, okay. I have two questions. First, I have an idea for a TV program. Like, for example, if you take the Wheel of Fortune, like many years ago, somebody came with this idea. So I have, of course, totally different...
I think he's in his car.
We lost you.
No, you're feeding in and
out. Okay, take myself. Do I need to prepare some sort of like a document? What's the way to protect this kind of situation?
You need to look up a non-compete form on the internet.
Or non-compete
form.
Yeah, non-disclosure.
Non-disclosure.
But
and then they need to sign it.
Yes, before you give any studio your idea, they want. You want an agreement where they say that they're not going to steal your agreement and run with it without, cutting you into it. You might also want to do a treatment, a short explanation of it and of the outlines of the program, and register it with the Writers Guild, who do accept things like that. So you can show, and you have documentary proof, that you came up with this idea as of a certain date. And I don't think you have to be a member of the Writers Guild in order to do that.
Thanks, Michael. Okay, so now we're going to take a break and we'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Kent Hicks Construction, specializing in deep energy retrofits, passive house, zero energy homes, and historic restorations, serving Western Massachusetts for over 25 years. KentHicksConstruction.com. The New York State Bar Association's Lawyer Referral and Information Services, offering assistance via a new website, nysba.org/lawyer-referral. Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine. Exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and now new American-made frames where eyewear is an art. VisionExcelEyeCare.com. Jane Iredale, a mineral makeup company specializing in makeup that is good for the skin. Jane Iredale Retail Shop at Louisa Ellis Boutique, Great Barrington. JaneIredale.com. And Amherst Copy and Design Works, offering printing and copying, sign making and design services, from booklets to stationery and labels to lawn signs in downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, AmherstCopy.com.
Okay, we're back. All right, here we are. Part of what I like to do here on the Copyright Forum is get the contact information for each of the people. They get a line or two who are on the Copyright Forum, and then you can contact them individually or indivisibly. All right, Polly, you want to go first?
Oh, my contact information?
Who are you, Polly?
PM Law at buttonwoodart.com.
Okay, and how do you spell button?
B-U-T-T-O-N-W B-U-T-T-O-N-W-O-O-D-A-R-T.
Okay, so one more time now.
B-U-T-T-O-N.
No. The whole thing.
PM Law at buttonwoodart.com.
Perfect. Okay, Paul Rapp.
I can be reached. My website is paulrapp.com, and my email is paul@paulrapp.com.
Say paulrapp.com.
Two P's.
Two P's.
What do you mean two P's?
And an R.
And a pod?
PaulRapp, as in Peter.
Oh, rap has two P's in it.
Yes.
Now I get it.
And not two T's, as in Tom.
Or in rap.
That's what it sounds like sometimes when I say it.
Yeah. Okay. And you? Bill Westwood 3.
WestwoodMedical.com. My email is westwood@capital.net.
A-L, it's that A-L-O-L.
Yeah,
A-L is Albany, right? O-L is the capital.
Why they did that, I have no idea.
Yeah.
It's always been a terrible, terrible thing. Yeah. I don't like it. Okay, is that enough?
That's enough.
Okay, all right.
Thank you.
Let's go now to, let's see how we say this. Stacy in Utica. All right, Stacy in Utica. You're on.
Hello.
Stacy. Hey, Stacy. Oh, boy. Here's what
it's
happened.
Stacy.
All right,
hey,
let's Stacey. Go.
Hey,
Stacy. Bring it on home.
Okay, I have a fair use question. I'm a college professor at one of the schools in Utica, and our institution has purchased educational rights to show different videos on campus in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And so the institution owns these educational licensing rights, but I also teach online, and I've been having this ongoing kind of debate with my educational technology office and the reference librarian. When I'm showing a documentary in class, I typically don't show the full 54 minutes. I will show, like, if it's something from the History Channel, I might show maybe an 8-minute segment. And the DVD that I have is divided into chapters, but my reference librarian and the ed tech people say that we can, we have educational rights to use that online because our students have to sign in to Blackboard who mm-hmm. are registered for the classes.
Mm-hmm.
But that I can't chunk the upload, the video, like it is on the DVD, how it's in chapters. They said I can't do that. I'd have to upload the full 54 minutes when I just want the students to focus on a 10-minute clip.
Well,
and I think they're wrong.
But are they talking about the rights, or are they just talking about technical, technically breaking the video up?
They think we don't have the right to break it up. But I'm like, the DVD in class is organized in chapters because I can click on a menu yeah. and right. then click through the option. But well, they said, yeah, we can't do that. And I said, I don't think that's right.
Yeah, well, I'd have to see the. It's, that's really a matter of contract
yeah.
between the distribution company and the institution. I mean, if you only want to watch them a little bit, you can upload the whole thing and say, well,
exactly.
just take it from 2 minutes to 8 minutes, and that's all I want you to watch. And students being what they are, they probably won't watch a second more than what you tell them to.
Or a second at all.
But, right.
but I also would think that the question could be answered by her asking to see the contractual agreement, the licensing
yeah.
agreement, and read through that and see if there's some prohibition in there from doing it for to keep her from doing that.
Have you ever read one of those licenses?
Yeah, I've read them, and it you know your eyes roll.
You know,
back.
I think when this first came up, this topic, I had asked for that, and they kind of looked at me like I had 10 heads. Like,
and for
we
good
don't
reason.
Have that.
Yeah.
You know, we purchased it through like one of the educational companies that handles, I guess, I don't know how they did it, but anyway.
Well, I can't, also can't imagine that the educational company is going to be hanging around the school monitoring
yeah.
your you know, breaking up this DVD into small segments.
Well, it also
right, because it's not like we're really, I'm not changing anything in the DVD. I'm just chunking it. So say a student doesn't have the fast internet connection at home,
mm-hmm.
broadband or something, they have a slower connection. They're not trying to, they're not waiting as their computers trying to upload 54 minutes.
Okay,
you know,
listen,
listen,
before we have a lot of people hanging on. We only
okay.
have a few minutes
yep.
left. I wanted to ask you one last question. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have tenure?
Yes.
Okay,
so, you know, tell the technical department what we said and go for it.
Okay. Bye. So long.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Okay. what? Okay, now we're going to go to, 12 minutes and 18 seconds for Barbara in Ballston Lake. Barbara in Ballston Lake. You're on, Barbara.
I'm going back in time to the 1950s. It's just a question on copyright. My mother was a vocal composer, music published by Shermer's. She was a member of ASCAP. I was able, she's passed, and I was able to take part of the information from ASCAP. So my question is, in the area here, I see musical compositions used but copied. And it was interesting because I just got a notice through ASCAP of a choral group that paid to use her composition. But I was just wondering, is the copyright all gone now, or...
If ASCAP is continuing to administer it, I would assume that the copyright is still good. You would have to look and see if it was done in the 50s, it was originally registered in the 50s, there would have to have been at some point a
renewal
because of the time when it was made. And if there was a renewal, then the copyright is going to continue till...
is there a period of time that...
When,
say, from the first copyright?
28 years from the first copyright, there would have to be a renewal. And
you
can't find that information at the Copyright Office, but Stanford University keeps a very searchable database of copyright renewals.
But how would Barbara know who was ripping off her mom's stuff? Is there any way of finding that out?
That's not the question.
No, that's my question.
Oh, well.
She wouldn't,
unless she heard it being ripped off.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, Barbara, thank you for your call. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Bye. Okay, and now the next person up is going to be George in Middletown, of all places. Okay, George, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call here.
Sure.
You had a caller that was talking about taking pictures during theater performances. Did I hear that right?
No. Yeah.
They're production photographs.
No, they wasn't. Yeah. Oh, I was the one who threw the monkey wrench in, George, and said, were they taking it during the performance? But no, it was a production photograph, yeah.
Okay, but so even some of those rights, when you get the rights to do a play, if it's not in the public domain, that's controlled by a couple of agencies or by the playwright themselves. And they do often have restrictions on even the production photographs,
I do think we said that. I think we.
Yeah, it's a contractual issue. Yeah.
Okay. That's a good point.
Okay.
Thanks an awful lot.
Okay.
Thanks.
Yeah, and thanks for
holding
on.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Appreciate it. Okay, and now, oh boy, Jack in Worthington, Massachusetts. Jack, you're on.
Yeah, hi. Basically, a quick question. I publish a monthly newsletter for a product that I manufacture, and I was just wondering the restrictions, if I could take quotes or bits and pieces of information from either articles in magazines or on the internet and give them attribution and put them in my newsletter.
Is your newsletter print or is it online?
Online.
I would just include links.
A short quote you can certainly use, and if it's online, link back to the original, and don't take any more of the quote than you need to make your point, and then have a link back. And you ought to be safe. And the worst that'll happen is they'll call and tell you to take it down. But why would they do that?
Yeah, you know? You go to prison.
Right. If it's part of a magazine article, there are a couple of trade magazines. Can I give attribution, or do I need to get permission for the magazine? If I was just taking a quote,
I would use attribution and a link back to the original article.
Yeah,
if it's a short quote,
that would be fair use. So
yeah,
sure. Yeah. If it's a magazine, just the magazine and the issue and like that.
I mean, when people review products, they expect the person who manufactures the product to quote them. Is Jack there?
I think something happened,
yeah.
Jack.
Oh, there he is.
Okay. Hey, Jack, we were worried about you. We were worried about you, but we got to go. Thank you. Okay, 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Yes, Polly, I know.
Well, Steve has been waiting. He's been waiting for more than the 10 minutes.
Oh, good. All right. Steve, you're on the air.
Hi. You're familiar with the local grocery place, Stewart's, chain based in Saratoga.
Yeah, sure.
Well, there's also a soda company based in Texas, I believe, called Stewart's, and the typeface on the bottles is remarkably similar to the signs above the Stewart's stores. And when I first saw the bottles, I bought them for a while thinking that it was from the store, but I researched it and it's not. So I was wondering if there was any trademark question there.
Do they use the same maroon color background?
Usually there's no background on the typeface.
Wow, and you bought it around here?
I think so.
Mm. I mean, if they're overlapping geographically, there could be a trademark issue, but that's really up to...
But if you got it in Texas, I don't think Stewart's is a chain down in Texas.
Right. Right.
Well, I don't go to Texas very much, but it could have been in New York City. Actually, I'm pretty sure I had seen them in New York City, and I'm sure that I've seen them in the Midwest.
Yeah, and that's probably not close enough. But if Stewart's here wants to do something about it, if there's something to do, I'm sure they'll do it.
Give them a call and ask if there's a reward. Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. All right, and now we're going to Jim in Adams, Massachusetts. Okay, Polly? Jim?
Yes, please.
Yes, hello, good afternoon.
Hello.
Thank you for taking my call. And I'm thinking of making use of a mechanical device that was developed during the NASA space program. So there, of course, publicly funded, so it's in public domain. I was wondering if there's any way I can protect my particular use of this device in trying to improve the function of a mechanical device.
That's something you'd have to talk to a
patent. Medical device, I should say.
Yeah, to talk to a patent lawyer about. If you're not altering the NASA device and just repurposing it for another use, I'm thinking not, but a patent lawyer would be able to tell you.
You mean I cannot protect my use of it?
Probably not, if you haven't altered the device. But that's something
I'm not thinking of altering it at all.
Yeah. But I would ask a patent lawyer to be sure. None of us are patent lawyers. So.
All right. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Good luck.
Thank you.
Yep.
1-800-348-2551. Lee in Pittsfield. Lee, you're on.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about a copyright limitations on photographs that I have taken of well-known performers. Am I allowed to sell them without getting clearance from the performing artist? And, you know, am I allowed to post them? What are the restrictions?
Were they taken? They were taken in a public place, obviously.
Yes, at music venues such as Tanglewood and the like, the Colonial Theater.
If you sold them as art, numbered prints with a fairly limited run, I'm going to say yes. If you know, if they were published somewhere, any, I think certainly you could post them on the web. You probably couldn't make posters. You couldn't put them on
T-shirts. You couldn't license the image.
And you couldn't, but...
I couldn't make cards, for an instance.
No.
That's a little too blatantly commercial.
But wouldn't it also...
What would I have to... I'd have to get written clearance from any performers to do so?
Yeah, but wouldn't it also depend on where the performers were from? For example, California has much more restrictive...
I see. Well, most of this is all local, regional.
Okay.
Yeah.
And because one of the performers asked me to remove, or his lawyer asked me to remove their photo from my website, which I did.
On what
basis?
But
I was sort of surprised. Yeah. I wasn't selling them. I was just displaying them.
Yeah, and that's probably out of bounds.
That's overreaching.
Yeah.
Why? It's overreaching to ask me to remove it or to put it up.
Yeah, what was really? The basis for them asking you to take it down?
Well, they protect his image and so on. You know, then they would say you can't use his image without their permission in any capacity.
Well, that's maybe in California you can't anymore, but...
Well, and they're trying to pass that in New York.
Yeah.
But
I tried to respect their wishes, of course, and I took it down, but I was a little surprised.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't know what the rights were or anything, but I have to respect their wishes.
I don't know. People take my picture in the Berkshires all the time, and nobody has ever asked me whether it's okay.
Right. Right, I mean, I'm kind of surprised. It sounds out of bounds. It sounds really kind of prima donna-ish, and there's plenty of artists who are like that, and and they get their management to overstep their bounds.
Well, not only that, but you lawyers, you know, it costs money to defend.
It's, and you know, if they came,
you know, I got a formal letter from a lawyer.
A lawyer letter,
which sort of really surprised me.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, Lee.
Thank you so much.
We are. Unfortunately, we had one person, Dina, from Glens Falls. She let a trademark lapse, and she wanted to know what to do about that.
Reapply.
Okay. Just reapply. Okay, here we go. So anyway, that's the end of the show. And I'm really sorry to say that because we are out of time. Thanks to Bill Westwood, Polly Law, and Paul Rapp for joining us today. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Blue Sky Bicycles, Saratoga Springs, New York, now offering electric bikes to the Capital Region, featuring pedal assist bikes with test rides available. BlueSkyBicycles.com, George Propane, Goshen, Massachusetts, family owned and operated for over 75 years, serving Western Massachusetts with propane and full service heating and plumbing installation, services and deliveries, georgepropane.com, Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, Old South Street, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts, dairy and Nomu, dairy free. handmade artisan ice cream, sweet baked goods, hot fudge, and more, heralds.com, and the Albany Pine Bush Preserve, presenting opportunities to the Capital Region to engage in conservation science lecture series and citizen science participants helping collect data and research, albanypinebush.org. Thanks again, everybody. Our engineer was Zach Malloy. Colleen O'Connell answered the phones. Producer was Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Shartok. Tomorrow, our avian expert, Rich Guthrie, will be in the studio to talk birding. Stay tuned now for a news update.